Bobbish.
Okay, thank you for the introduction. And yes, it's about like programs with effects, but it's perhaps actually slightly less about the advantages and disadvantages of the different approaches, but we'll see. So I'll start with the conclusion. so if you want to, so this is like, or at least a large part of the conclusion. This is really a talk about abstraction, specifically about finding the right level of abstraction. And that's really the core of what this is about. And also as a disclaimer, it's an opinion talk. So I'm talking from my personal experience, so the things that I've seen in my, what is it now, like 25 years or Pascal, from the beginnings of being an undergraduate student to now being in industry and working with large production code bases. And there is a lot of things that aren't backed up by hard science. So they're just personal opinion. So if you want to disagree, feel free to disagree. That's perfectly fine. There are things that you can disagree about, and I would welcome discussion. So if you have something to object to or also something to support, also during the talk, just feel free to interrupt, okay? So so let's start with the question, what even are effects? And I think it's important to make the distinction between effects and side effects. Because side effects, like things that, I don't know, formatting your hard disk or something like that, that's a side effect of your program. And that is clearly an effect in our sense as well. But more typically, what we think of as effects in our program are things that we want to, from the current perspective we're in, we want to put them a little bit on the side. And that's a very flexible and very varied notion, right? So, and there, that's why I'm attempting these different kinds of definitions. So effects can be things that are just awkward to express in a purely functional style. Things like, I don't know, state, right? And you can, of course, encode state rather easily by saying, I have an input value, I have an output value, but then keeping track of that is noisy and is annoying, and therefore you want to perhaps abstract from it, right? Things you don't want to concern yourself with it on a continuous basis. And effects are also often things that you might want to interpret differently depending on the situation you're in. And perhaps most prominently, perhaps between a production and a staging environment or a production and a testing environment, you have certain things that are different. And often sort of like having all the aspects of a production environment is difficult, and you still want to test large parts of your application, ideally in a different scenario, in a different setting. So if you can interpret certain effects in a flexible way and differently depending on the situation, that is good. So what are examples? Right, there is a large number of examples. I could probably like easily pick yet again as many. So there is this thing like state, handling something like mutable variables, but they don't even have to be mutable under the hood, but something that feels like dealing with mutable variables. Any kind of error handling exceptions, where you like break out of your normal control flow and catch it somewhere. Things like non-determinism in various notions, where you have like computations that have multiple results, or things that really like work in like weird ways depending on like what scenario you're running in them. And things like logging, where you just want to have a log of your progress, concurrency, randomness, and then, like, I mean, perhaps the further down the list we're getting here, the more we come into the realm of real side effects, so to speak, like, I mean, but there are many different ones of those, like accessing the system time, disk access, database access, networking, and there are more things that you could include here, which are often also in the Haskell world, where I'm mostly going to speak about, are often neglected, like things like performance can be seen as an effect, where you say you give a certain notion of cost to your application, and something that takes three times as long can possibly be very different from something that takes less long. And also termination, right, is sometimes being seen as an effect, or non-termination, more precisely, the option to not terminate it. And in a way, you can even like say things like heating up your machine, right, is sort of an effect. So there's a long list, potentially. Now, if you have an application, yeah, you typically need various effects out of this list, right? And ideally, you would like to control them, right? So in many languages, sort of so-called impure languages, you just have many or even all effects at your disposal at all times, right? But one of the nice things of Haskell is that you can say you don't have most effects at your disposal at most times. And why is that in general a good idea? Well, for multiple different reasons. Primarily for safety, perhaps, because you simply want to say this part of the program can't possibly do this ugly thing, and therefore I know that it is well behaved in a certain way. But also, again, flexibility. If you abstract from certain effects, you're more flexible in the sense that you can like perhaps attach different interpretations to them, or you can take a piece of code and run it in a different setting, in a different scenario, more easily if you know that it doesn't do a certain thing. But also for design, right, for your program. If you just want to have some structure in your program, you have different components, just thinking about what do they actually need in order to do their job, that can help you, perhaps. Okay, so in Haskell, we typically use monads to talk about effects, to model effects, and sometimes related interfaces, such as applicative functors, right? But monads are sort of the classic interface. And the idea then is that you have a parameterized type M, right? So an M of A represents a computation that yields values of type A. So, and I'm using the plural there because, I mean, depending on the kind of effect, it can be multiple values of type A. It can also be never actually a value of type A. If you have an effect encoding failure, like then it's possible that there are zero A's that you're actually producing. But if you produce some kind of results, then it's typically something of type A. And along the way, you're encapsulating various effects. One type can potentially encapsulate multiple different effects. And then you have these operations that are called pure, or more classically return, right? But the Haskell world is switching to pure these days, where you're saying you have a value of type A, you're embedding that into your world of effectful computations, M of A, but the idea of pure is always not making use of the effects that are offered. That's always the intuition behind pure, right? If M symbolizes a certain presence of an effect, then pure X is not using that effect, right? And then you have a sequencing operation which is called bind, where you're saying if I have two computations in my effectful world, I can combine them into one, which is sort of performing the effects of these two computations in sequence, and additionally, the second computation can actually depend on the result or the results of the first. Right. So that's sort of the general idea.
Can I just make a note about the pedagogy? Do you feel like you need to distinguish between, you know, like the class of effects that a certain monad brings and the different effects of different monads? Because as you say, you know, it's like with a particular monad, then you have got, you know, like various effects.
Yes.
Of monad, like. But then, you know, when you talk about, then you sort of vary over monads, then, you know, then you are going to vary across, you know, a larger sea of monads. So.
Yes. Okay.
And
so
the question is just, you know, this could be this could be confusing to beginners because you.
So I guess the remark is that there is a difference between sort of the I'm not even sure whether I come like the varying monad, the varying effects of different monads.
When
and
you
the
vary m as opposed to the fact that m itself has different effects going on in it.
There is no bijection between effects and monads. Maybe that's the thing. They're not exactly the same concept. I guess you'll probably conclude at some point that monads are maybe effect handlers and not effects.
Because
okay. No, I think for pragmatic reasons, not because I want to shut down the discussion, but for pragmatic reasons, let's shift this to a slightly later stage of the talk. Let's just move on for the time being. I think nothing of what you said is wrong, but let's see where this is leading for the time being. So. So in general, we are expecting that monads satisfy so-called monadic laws, right? And the idea of the monadic laws, they are very simple. They're looking like this, but it's really not mattering for the rest of the talk. The idea is that this is expressing, these two are expressing that pure should really not use any effects. And that this one, which is associativity of bind, that bind should really sequence, that it sort of has the notion of sequencing that we would expect. Again, this is to a certain extent informal, but it's a good intuition, that the reason that we have these laws are because we want to kind of capture this intuition, right? And basically they're expressing things that we would naturally assume to be true if we just think about monads as capturing certain effects. Now, if you have an application, as I said, you want to have certain effects in your application, how do you find the right monadic type in order to use for a part of your application? That's sort of the question, right? Because like we want to have access to, I don't know, depending on the application, we want to have access to the disk, we want to have logging functionality, we want to have this, we want to have that. How do we get a type that allows us to do the things that we want to do without allowing us to do the things that we don't want to do, right? And there are multiple strategies that we can employ in order to get there. One is we can take the monolithic approach, where we basically define an implementation of a type that just does everything that we want, right? And that is that's something that I've been doing during the, I don't know, first five to seven years of my Haskell career. I mean, it's not wrong to do this, right? I mean, you can do it, but it is repetitive and to a certain extent annoying. So first of all, you have to understand how monads work internally. What is the right implementation? How can you have to define the instances, right? You have to actually like have a data type. First of all, you have to know how it actually looks. Then you have to define the instances by hand. It's very easy to make mistakes, right? You actually should at least convince yourself that it satisfies the laws, or the laws to a certain extent, because if you do something that does not satisfy the laws, then it will be counterintuitive to use sooner or later, right? And once you have done that, you're kind of happy that you've reached that stage, and then you reach this stage where you think like, oh, well, if I need a new effect, oh no, I don't want to do this all again, right? Because now you have to change the thing, you have to change the definition of bind, you have to change the definition of pure, you have to reprove the laws. And that kind of leads to overall, like, potentially bad design, because you are, like, basically encouraged to use sort of a one-size-fits-all approach, where you say, I have this monad already, so better everything that I do from now on fit in here, rather than picking sort of the right tool for the job. So if you need something new, you're encouraged, perhaps I can do without it. If you don't need a certain feature, you think, oh, well, I can as well like throw it into this big monad because it does everything I want. So so that's sort of potentially leading to bad design. And it's relatively inflexible, because if you want to actually have different implementations, then no, you have your one implementation. You can try to sort of give a different implementation, but if your whole application or a large part of your application is programmed against this one concrete type, right, then it's not easy to swap that type out for something else. Okay? The other approach is that you can try to combine effects, that you somehow have a compositional approach. Right? That sounds better to us, I think, in general. Right? If we can somehow reuse something, and if we have a sort of a buffet of effects, and we can just pick the ones that we want and combine them, and then have everything that we need for a particular situation more or less automatically without having to redo all the work. So that sounds good in principle, and there are at least two very popular approaches for this. One, which is the significantly older one, is to use Monad transformers, and the other, which is more recent but is very active, I think, in the whole last 10 years perhaps, is to use effects. I mean, this is sort of again, this is slightly, because we are talking about effects also in the context of Monad transformers. I mean, often this is called algebraic effects, extensible effects. There are all sorts of variations of this theme. Right, anyway, but there's a large class of libraries there. In fact, there are also many Monad transformer libraries, but if we come sort of to the Haskell landscape, I think it's fair to say that 90 or even more percent of all the programs that do use Monad transformers are just using the classic MTLM transformers library, whereas on the effects side, the story is far more complicated. There are several libraries that are competing, and there is at least one new library every year, probably more than one new library every year at the moment. So let's look at a couple of examples of how a piece of code could look like when we use one of these compositional approaches. Okay, so here is a sort of, I guess, a pseudocode as sort of a validator of events, or you could think of it as validating or looking at incoming network packets, or there are different scenarios in which you could be doing something like this. But essentially, you have a function validate which takes a payload, so this is a piece of information, an event or something, and this could be called multiple times. And then you're logging some message here. Right, so we're writing something to the screen in this case, could be to a file as well. And then we're performing some actual validation, that's this function which I'm not even showing, which is doing all the hard work at looking at the payload and classifying it in one of three possible categories. So, totally okay, not totally okay, and really, really badly wrong. Right? And basically, if it's totally okay, then all we're going to do is we're counting sort of the size of the payload. You can imagine that every payload contains actually a number of different messages or transactions or whatnot, and you just want to count those. So you have some notion of the size, and you're accessing some state, and you're incrementing that state by the size. If it's not okay, you're again logging that. And if it's really, really badly wrong, you're aborting the whole thing, because perhaps you've discovered from the payload that nothing you're relying on makes any sense anymore. Everything, it doesn't make sense to continue. You want to sort of jump out of the current process. Okay? And so this is how you could write it using MTL and transformers, which are packages which are very old, are originally by Andy Gill and Ross Patterson. And you can kind of see that we're using various different kinds of effects here by means of different functions. So get and put are kind of accessing state. This lift IO is kind of indicating that we're doing some side affecting operation. Put string line is then actually printing something to the screen. And this throw error here is sort of causing an exception. Okay? So the type of this in MTL could look like this. So we say we have IO, which is a type which gives us all the actual side affecting things. In particular, it gives us put string line. And then we add in errors of a certain kind. That's giving us this functionality here. And then we add in state. right? And in particular an integer state, because we're like, we're assuming we can add to it, right? And so we can combine multiple effects by starting from one thing and then adding in other things, and they're typically called something T for transformer and so on. And so you can build this chain, or often it's called monad transformer stack, that gives you the overall thing. So that's one option that you have, right? So you can do a very similar thing actually with various effects libraries. And I mean, I'm just picking one which I'm personally relatively fond of right now, which is called Effectful. I'm getting ahead of myself, sorry. So let's first go here, yeah. Okay, so let's do this first. So transformer-based effects, they come with interfaces, as we've seen before. So for example, there is a class monad state, which gives us get and put. There is a class monad error, which gives us throw error, and also a catch error, which we haven't been using. And there is a class monad IO, which gives us lift IO. And then actually, you get all sorts of instance declarations for these classes that make it so that if you compose together a type like this, you can use all these methods on that composed type. Okay? So that's sort of the machinery behind monad transformers. So now if you wanted to do this, you could, rather than picking a concrete type, rather than picking this concrete type, you could also say, and that's arguably better perhaps, that validate is only requiring a type that satisfies these three interfaces, right? That's an option you have. Then you're no longer requiring that you have one particular choice of monad transformer stack, but any type that in some way implements these three interfaces would do. Right, and that makes it clearer that you could possibly swap out the concrete implementation for a different one that would implement these interfaces in a different way. Okay. Now we come to Effectful. If we wanted to do the same thing using Effectful, we could actually like leave the code exactly as it was, right? But the type signature changes. So rather than having this monad state and monad error and monad IO class, and an arbitrary monad in the result type, we have a particular type F that's always the same, but it's parameterized by a set of effects, if you like. And then you're just saying, oh, all right, state has to be in this set of effects, and error has to be in this set of effects, and the IO effect has to be in this set of effects. But eventually, like, there is not a big difference if you write your code in this style, right? So it looks pretty much the same. There are all sorts of differences between like effects libraries and monad transformers in the details, but if you write your code in this style, it's not a big deal. Like, the code is actually exactly the same, only the type signature is a different one. Now, is this code good?
Yes. Type signature is good, or just
no? Like everything, like the implementation and the type signatures, right? I mean, this code and any of the three type signatures for this code that we've seen. You want to?
Even in the stack, there is some order, but in the constraints, if given, like, does state commute with either, for example?
Yeah. Okay. So I mean, so there's certainly a relative difference. I would also say this is probably the worst of the three types. And it is a particular, like, one of the sort of known deficiencies of monad transformers that actually they suggest a flexibility that is not fully there. Like, I mean, the sort of the initial appeal is you start from somewhere and you add an arbitrary effect, but actually you have to be incredibly careful in which order you're adding them, and if you add them in some orders, they don't even yield a valid monad at all. So even this kind of promise, regardless of what you're doing, you're just composing things and you'll always get a monad out, even that is not necessarily always true. So that's certainly one issue, but okay, I mean, if you just look at the code, right, and if we look at the other two types, which don't pick an order, are these good or are they not good? Yes?
I would say that the code is maintainable in the way that the way you're using effects is generic, so you can swap out the type signature,
yeah,
and the code remains the same. So I would say that that's a thing that you would like in the program.
So you mean that I can swap out the type signature from the one library to the other and the code remains the same as a good property? Yeah, okay, I can agree with that, but I would nevertheless say all of these versions are bad. And why are they bad? Well, that's because we are not abstracting at all. What we're doing is incredibly low level, and it is incredibly close to the library. We are basically letting ourselves be guided by the library. The fact that these libraries have similar interfaces is a nice accident, right? That even further perhaps steers us into this direction. But it doesn't actually make this good code. Because if we just look at it, right? So we're not really using the full functionality of the state monad here. Like state gives us sort of full read-write access, get and put are meaningless operations in a way. If you just look at the name get, it's like, give me all the state. Put is like, write all the state. But you don't know what the state is. You don't know what it is for. You don't know what you're supposed to do with it. You have the full power, and the full power is probably too much. So in particular here, we only ever really want to increment something. So we have an integer state and we are using it as some kind of counter, and we want to increment the counter. Very often you have typical usage patterns on pieces of state where you only want to use state in particular access patterns. So it's not necessarily great if we just allow the full functionality everywhere. Even more pronounced this is with our I/O, right? Really what we want to do is we want to log something. And it's incredibly assuming that we say, only because we want to log something, we give ourselves the option of doing arbitrary I/O, right?
That's just because you use particular monads or effects here.
Yeah.
The problem of the effect framework you've used.
Right? No. I'm not complaining about the effect framework. I'm complaining about my code.
Okay.
Right? So I'm saying I've written bad code. I'm not saying that the effect framework is to blame, not at all, right? So that's exactly the right observation, thank you, right? So we should look at ourselves. Like, in particular, you should all look at me. You're already doing
it's
that.
Not
but
clear. It's not clear. This is like, you know, presumably it's like one snippet,
yeah,
of a, you know, like one function of a larger code base, and that rest of it, you know, you may actually want that state, you know, to actually be used as the piece of RAM that the state.
Sure. Again, the remark is you may actually want, because this is only one example. In other places, you might want to actually do arbitrary things with your state anyway. So get and put might be the right abstraction. That is a valid point, right? You have to look at your entire program. But if you look at this example, it seems wrong. It seems like the wrong approach. And again, it's like, right, everything I'm saying, there are nuances, but like sort of in big lines, I think we too often are using too low-level effects.
And
right?
One thing I do not understand,
yeah.
So
sure.
Assuming that you have, that would like to have two counters,
yeah.
Counter one and counter two,
yeah.
And now in the type, I would put the state monad twice.
Yeah, so this is... This is actually another. This is another good point. So I mean, this is another thing which is often being used as sort of like, oh, look, effects libraries are potentially better than monad transformers, because what happens if you have two state transformers in one monad stack is you have to say like both have get and put, but which do you mean? And in order to access one of the two, you can use get and put, and in order to access the other, you have to use lift get and lift put. But this is absurd. I would say if you have ever a program like real application code, not some sort of library, some glue code, where lift occurs, you've done something fundamentally wrong, right? So but that's part of what I'm saying. Like if you instead designed an interface specific to your application, where you say I want to access this thing or I want to access that thing, then you have a disambiguation from the start. And then you don't run into this kind of problem, right? So, but yeah, it's another good point. So let's look just to as an example. If we just look at our use of state, we have like get and put. So what we could do to abstract, we could say we have a step counter by function, which just takes an integer and then just gets and increments the counter by this. And then we replace the call in our like main code by the step counter by function. And that gives us a more high level operation rather than using get and put. Of course, it's dedicated, it's just an example, right? We could go even further and say, oh, perhaps we can even abstract from the thing and just have a count payload function, which also abstracts from this payload size thing. There's a little bit of a design space here, right? But I mean, but nevertheless, this like makes the interface more high level because we're saying we don't have arbitrary state. It's much more meaningful for our application. It's a more high level effect. Similarly, rather than saying list IO, right, let's just say log message and abstract from this, okay? And log message is much more concrete. And this is just like term level abstraction. For error, perhaps, is the least convincing because we're like just replacing one function with another here. So it's perhaps not really the big deal. But for the other ones, it's already quite meaningful. We're getting from the original code to this. And that looks, in a way, much more meaningful. It's improved, I would say, but it's still bad. Why is it still bad?
Yeah. Well, for one thing, well, you basically just swapped out the class functions by some things that you defined yourself.
Yeah.
I also would say that you should use a writer monad over some int for counting the payload. That's what you complained about, you're using more state that you really want. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, writer is another low-level effect. I mean, so it's like you should think about what are the operations that you actually need, not about what is the implementation you need, right? So, and I think the main reason why this version is still bad, which is related to what you said, I just swapped out something, is that we swapped out things on the term level, on the implementation level, but not the types are still the same.
You should be able
right?
to find your own.
The types are these, and the types leak all the implementation, the low-level implementation details still. So we have like sort of much more expressive things on the term level. But on the type level, we're still using a state effect, an error effect, and monad IO. And basically, we still have access to all that functionality.
So you want to shrink the space?
Yeah, we really want to, like, we want to replace these with better, like, with better descriptions, right? And so libraries, and that is again, I'm not bashing the libraries, right? By necessity, offer low-level effects because these are the fundamental building blocks, right? But that's not what you should be using. Right? You should build application-specific, meaningful effects that make sense for you, right? And for the things, for the use patterns that you have, and implement in the end using these, sure, but not spread these directly all throughout your code base, because that is tying you far too much to these low-level effects. Is like ultimately making things too imprecise, and it's also very little, like it's not informative, right? Monad.io is not very satisfactory to have all over your place, right? Whereas if you say, oh, I need logging, that's much more informative, right? Oh, it's just logging, and you don't even need IO in order to implement logging, right? I mean, so it's much better. So in general, use high-level effects. If we need a counter, it should be a counter and not state. If we need a logger, it should be a logger and not IO, and so on and so forth. So you can just define your own classes, right? And like these classes can like have one implementation that is as before, but now if you abstract over this class, these classes rather than the original classes, you have a much more meaningful type signature. And you can swap out the high-level effect for a different implementation. And that's much better, right? And you can use these classes also for an effects library such as Effectful Or you can use things in an effects library as well, where you define your own effects. This is how it would look for effectful, but that's really besides the point. Like for other effects libraries, it's looking slightly different. But you can always define your own effects, both in transformers and in all effects libraries. That's not, again, it's not really a problem of the approach, but it is something you have to do, or you should do, right? And then you get to something like this. And that is better, and you can get even further. You can like have like basically combine these three things and say, this is my Monad validate, right? That's what I need for validation. And then you have just one constraint, and you can go to sort of a very high level application specific effect. And I think this is really, it's perhaps one of the things that I'm grateful for, that effects libraries put more on the map. They give more notion to like what is actually an effect, what is the signature of an effect, right? What are the operations that is like, and decoupling that from a particular implementation. That is really something where effects libraries are better. But even with effects libraries, you see very often that people don't do this. But surprisingly often, people are just using state and another state and I/O. And that's not really, then you're not gaining. Okay, yeah?
I would say sometimes it's a good thing, because if someone else looks at your code,
right,
and he says he sees the Monad state,
yeah,
and say, right, this guy is tracking some state.
Yeah.
Yeah. If he sees a Monad logger, then right, this guy is logging something. So when you're not coming up with your own names all of the time, yeah, then you're making the code more readable to others?
Okay, so the argument is that if you're using the common interface, you have common grounds, essentially. That's the argument. Then like, it's more readable to others. I think there is a trade-off there, but I think it is not that large, because really, I mean, if you have state, yeah, sure, you know it's state, but if you then like have very complicated pieces of state and you're navigating, like then people are saying, okay, you should have one state monad, you should have a huge state type, you should use lenses in order to access the right position, and you have like a nested record which has several branching things. In the end, I would say it's much easier, like if you, in most cases, you need one particular minor detail, like say the current score or the current time, to have a function get time. Right, and like that is still very suggestive of what it does, rather than like something which is very generic. But it is a trade-off, agreed. I mean, so perfectly fine. So as a final design question, and perhaps also a controversial point, like if we look at something simple like count payload, right, where we said, okay, it takes a payload, it increments the counter by the size of the payload. We have two possible types for that, given what we've been discussing so far, and even more if we include sort of the effects variants of these, but that's really besides the point. We can give it monad counter or monad validate. Which of the two is better? So I hear mumbling monad counter. I think that's probably the intuition, that's actually been my intuition for a long time as well. Of course, you want to be precise. Right, the former is much more precise. I only need monad counter. Why would I give it a sort of a more permissive type? But I think, actually, and this is again, this like, I mean, there are nuances, right? But I think in many cases, you should actually give the more permissive type. And why is that? So one thing is like, so there's this thing which I've seen surprisingly often. People are very precise. People are like developing lots of functions with all very precise types. So like I have one function which has one monadic constraint and another which has another. And perhaps some of these even have two or three constraints, right? Just the effects we need for the functions, right? Only the effects we need. We are very precise everywhere. And then we start putting it together and we get things like this, right? Where we have a function that has 1,000 different constraints. Like, I mean, that's of course like too many, but still, I mean, like an awful number of different constraints. And in fact, we have lots of compositions in our program, and they all have different types. They all collect different subsets of constraints. And what I've really seen is that there is sort of a there are big pitfalls of what I call excessive bottom-up design. So you try to be very precise, right? Give all the components, the types they seem to need, the effects they seem to need, but it doesn't go along with an intuition of what this function, what this part of your program ought to be allowed to do, right? Because you're then tempted to always give functions all the permissions. And sometimes you give too many effects. Sometimes you have difficulty in adding new effects. And you have like many, many different combinations. But in fact, effects interact, and not all combinations really make sense, and sometimes you want to reason about sort of few sets of specific combinations. It's actually easier to identify a few subsets and push them in. So that's what I would say. Like, at least keep in mind that you should also be doing top-down design, where you actually say, these are sets of effects that make sense, and then, for example, a logging effect is probably something that you can easily grant everywhere, even if you're not using it, because it makes it easier to start using it once you need it, right? And so that's the general idea. Okay, so let's come to the end, right? Abstract, do not let your choice of effects library leak too much, right? Because if you're doing all these things, it's eventually, I wouldn't say it's irrelevant, but it is relatively unimportant whether you're using MTL or whether you're using this effects library or that effects library. If you adhere to these design principles, switching from one to the other is relatively easy, right? And pick high-level application-oriented effects. Also consider pushing effects down rather than just letting them bubble up. Okay, that's it. That's it.
Thank you so much. We have time for a few questions.
Just a point of clarification. Are you suggesting to design your own Monad class for your specific application?
Yes.
To define the specific interface?
Yes.
I have a problem with that because classes leak out of modules. So when somebody else would try to use your library, there's another class in scope, and you cannot use your code without importing the definition of this class somehow. Where nowadays you can have type synonyms for constraints, like that Monad validate is just the tuple consisting of Monad or Monad writer counter and Monad logger or whatever. And so your opinion of the constraints getting very large doesn't really apply nowadays.
Yeah, I think, my personal opinion there is class synonyms are great, but you should define them using classes. The point is, if you use type synonyms, you don't really abstract. Type synonyms in Haskell by necessity leak as well, right? I mean, they're even expanded by the type checker all the time. And you're just putting an abbreviation at the point where you're writing it, but not really for the user. There is there's some truth to what you say, but I think it's less important for applications. I'm mainly talking about application development. If you're developing a library where you want to present some reusable effect to your others, then sure, yeah, if you introduce a new class, it leaks. But even then, right? What else would you do? All the libraries out there that are doing it right, in my opinion, are also doing it. If you look at Monad Random or Monad Logger or something, of course they define their own classes because that's how they wrap up their things, right? So I think it's not such a big deal that you get a new class, but opinions may vary.
I'm afraid we don't